Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly. And joining us this week in the VIP tent is Major Mike Jameson. Hi, Mike. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me back.
Great to have you back. Now, this is your third ever podcast. Is that correct?
No, this is my now. It's, well, I'm trying to think. Let's see. Two Pod Dylans, and this is my third MASHcast, so fifth podcast.
Oh, fifth. Okay. This is your fifth. But they've all been with me, right?
It's all been with you, Rob. I start at the top. I go right to the top. I don't mess around with any low rent podcast. I start right at the top.
It truly is all downhill. So we're here to talk about season 4, episode 9, Quo Vadis, Captain Chandler. The original air date was November 7th, 1975. Written by Bert Prelutsky and directed by Larry Gelbart, wounded arrive and radar is shocked when one of the soldiers who arrived without dog tags says his name is Jesus Christ. Hawkeye and Beecher try to get the soldier's real name, but he insists that he really is Jesus Christ. His wound is superficial, so they assume he's doing this just to get out of the army, faking a psychological break. The soldier in question remains unruffled by the doctor's doubt. Frank and Margaret try to get Colonel Potter to step in since they are sure that liberal, bleeding heart Hawkeye and BJ will try and fill this soldier's head with all kinds of anti-American ideas. Potter refuses to humor them, so they take it upon themselves to contact Colonel Flagg, which shows up to investigate this soldier claiming to be Christ. Flagg reveals the soldier is actually Captain Arnold Chandler, a bombardier who has flown 57 bombing runs. Potter thinks it sounds like battle fatigue, but Flagg could not care less. Flagg demands Chandler be released back into service immediately, but Potter goes with Hawkeye's idea, getting the advice of an expert on cases like this, Major Sidney Friedman. Sidney arrives, and Flagg tries to talk him into backing his position. He first tries cajoling, then moves on to threatening, referencing Friedman's subversive background. Sidney is unmoved. Sidney then meets with Chandler, who, still as Christ, reveals a deep sadness about having to bomb people who never did anything to him. He weeps at the thought of dropping bombs on my children. They discuss the notion of faith and identity. Later, in a meeting in Potter's office, Sidney gives his professional opinion. Chandler is Christ. Potter replies, as you can see, I'm not laughing. Sidney then explains that Chandler has suffered a mental breakdown, feeling so tormented over the killing he's done that his mind has completely shut down, refusing to allow him to do any more fighting. He grabbed the most peaceful identity he could find, Jesus Christ, and Chandler disappeared inside. Colonel Flagg, of course, isn't buying any of this and now threatens to blow the whistle on Friedman and his pro-commie background, particularly Sidney's refusal to sign his officer's loyalty oath. When Hawkeye and BJ congratulate Sidney on not signing, Flagg thinks he's being played and insists that Sidney's staying right where he is in the army, where he'll have to be loyal to the organization that's going to hound your every step. He storms out, revealing Frank and Margaret listening outside. Potter shakes his head at Flagg's lunacy and ultimately decides to follow Sidney's advice. The next day, Captain Chandler, after blessing Radar's teddy bear upon request, boards the bus to be taken home. He still believes he's Christ, leaving Hawkeye, BJ, and Father Mulcahy to sadly watch as he departs. Okay, Mike, let's wind back. Do you remember when you first saw this episode? What was the context?
I don't remember. This episode is one of my favorite episodes, not only of MASH, but of television. Much like you say with the fourth season of MASH, I always thought that I was more of a season 1 to 3 fan, but watching it now, and especially it being on Hulu and having the whole series, season 4 and 5 are the best seasons, and this is probably in my top 3 of episodes. The first time I remember watching this was on my beloved Channel 29 in syndication, probably in the early 90s. I mean, I'm sure I had seen it before, but that's when I was, I don't think I went to the extent that you did, but I was kind of like taping episodes and I would have on the old, you know, the things that are called VHS tapes. I know half of our audience, well, they probably will remember because they're probably older people listening to this. But, you know, I used to have them with the MASH trying to draw on the side, and I would have the episodes that were on there. So that was the first time that I remember seeing this. And I just, I, I just think it's an amazing episode. I never get tired of watching this episode.
Yeah, it's a masterpiece. I mean, it's just a straight up masterpiece. I talked a couple episodes ago with Sean Ross about the late Captain Pierce and how I think that episode is a masterpiece. And it's even sort of all the more impressive that it comes so quickly after Welcome to Korea and Change of Command, two episodes that would have been easy to screw up because you're introducing new characters, replacing beloved characters from the first seasons, and it does it so well. And then to immediately follow it up with a classic like late Captain Pierce, and then have a bunch more episodes, which are all range from very good to excellent. And then to hit this one, which is another straight up masterpiece. I mean, to tackle this subject, this intermingling of politics, war, and religion is such a, no pun intended, minefield for any sitcom to handle. Even a drama would find this hard to do. And yet MASH manages to thread this needle perfectly. Part of it has to be in the performances, particularly Alan Fudge, the character actor who plays Captain Chandler. He passed away in 2011. He has credits in films like Family Plot, Alfred Hitchcock's final film, which we talked about over on the Fade Out podcast. And I noted back then that Alan Fudge was in that movie. Edward Scissorhands, The Natural, The Coen Brothers, The Man Who Wasn't There. He also had appearances on Trapper John M.D., and After MASH, unfortunately not playing Captain Chandler on After MASH. That would have been kind of an interesting idea, but he racked up appearances in basically all three of the MASH shows.
And he also, if I'm not mistaken, I know I've read this somewhere, he also auditioned to play BJ.
I never heard that. That's interesting.
Yes, I've read that he auditioned to play BJ, which is... after watching this show for, I'm 46, so 30-something years of my life and seeing Mike Farrell, I can't see it, but it's pretty amazing that, I've read that he was one of the people. I think he was one of the – it might have been – and don't quote me on this. It might have been down to him and Mike Farrell, and they picked Mike Farrell. But, yeah, he did audition to play BJ.
I literally have never heard that before. That's really fascinating. I think it says something about his performance, Alan Fudge's performance, that in the 30th anniversary reunion special, where the cast reassembles and they start talking about some of their favorite episodes, and Larry Gelbart or Gene Reynolds, one of the two, brings up Covadas, Captain Chandler, and they start talking about it, and Mike Farrell interjects. When someone mentions the character of Captain Chandler, it's Mike Farrell that interjects and he goes, Alan Fudge. He brings the guy. Boom. Mm-hmm. He was able to remember. Now, maybe he did some research before, whatever. But nevertheless, I thought it was very instructive that they remembered that, because this episode, and we'll get to all the other great things about this episode, but this episode in a lot of ways is really going to live or die by the performance, by the guy that you've cast to play Chandler / Jesus Christ. Because if there is any sense that this actor doesn't mean it, this character, I should say, the Captain Chandler, doesn't believe it, I think this thing is just going to sink. But there is something about the way Alan Fudge, the way he talks in this incredibly calming, serene voice, is just magnificent. And, I mean, he wasn't nominated for an Emmy or anything for the performance. He should have been, because this is the kind of guest performance that, to me, that's what Emmys are made for, is somebody who can come in and just do this one guest appearance and just sort of dominate the episode. And that's hard to do when you've got an episode that features both Sidney Friedman and Colonel Flagg.
That's true.
This is the only, other than Deal Me Out, this is the last time these two characters would interact. I mean, this is a overstuffed episode, and yet, to me, it's still the performance by Alan Fudge that makes it work so well, because I don't know. I mean, we'll get into this as we go. I'm not a man of faith. I never have been. I was raised Catholic, but I abandoned that a long time ago. But to me, I'm like, if I ever imagined what Jesus Christ would be like in terms of his demeanor, this is what I imagine. This is what, this is how I picture it.
I always wanted to use the phrase, you're stealing my thunder. So I'm going to say you're stealing my thunder. I was going to say, I was raised Catholic. I went to Catholic school for the first 12 from grade school into high school. And yeah, it's complicated. I believe there's something out there. Do I believe it's the God that Catholicism taught me about? I don't know. But I was going to say, if there is a Jesus, you would want it to be this type of person, somebody who's calm, somebody who can tell is gentle. And that goes back to what you're saying about the performance. I mean, it's a sitcom, and MASH wasn't your normal sitcom, but you could see, and I'm sure, and I'm going to bring up a show like Night Court, which I loved, and I haven't revisited Night Court in a long time, but I'm sure they might have even, I can't even remember, have an episode where somebody could say he was Jesus, and you could play it off in a more wackier type of way, or you can have somebody with the long hair and the beard. Even Alan Fudge, you look at him, he doesn't look like somebody who you would think is Jesus. He looks like somebody he's just a normal looking person. He's more on the, he's on the bigger side. He actually, the gentle demeanor that he has, I don't even think fits his look in a way. So it kind of goes against the type that you would think. So like you said, it all hinges on how he plays the character and the way he basically he's understated, but like you said, I mean, this whole episode centers around him. So if his performance, if you don't buy his performance, the episode falls apart. And luckily you buy his performance, and that's why the episode is the masterpiece that it is. Yeah. And to go back even farther to what you were saying, I mean, MASH, especially the later years, was, people say it was more of a dramedy than a comedy. It started out as a situation comedy. It became a dramedy. But I think this episode just shows what it was going to become, but does it in the best way possible, where it melds the comedy, it melds the drama, and it does it without hitting you over the head with it. Again, it's very understated, but it's affecting. And that's why I feel like you said, I mean, Mike Farrell's bringing it up, Larry Gelbart and Gene Reynolds are bringing it up. It's one that when you go back and look at the 250 some episodes, this has got to be, I say in the top five, but it should be at least in the top 10. It's got to be one of the most memorable that they ever created.
Absolutely. It opens up with a great kind of hook where, it seems like it's a normal day at the 477th where the wounded arrives, and we see there's a nice little moment where Hawkeye and BJ are doing triage on the bus, and we see Hawkeye kind of, I don't want to say overrule BJ, but kind of like he's sort of giving direction to BJ, mm-hmm. which again is a nice character touch, because of course Hawkeye is A, chief surgeon, and B, he's been there longer. So he's the one who's able to say, this guy should go first, and BJ just kind of goes, And then we get Radar, where he's taking the names of the soldiers, and an interesting touch in that it has a little bit of mystery to it, is that we don't hear what Captain Chandler says to Radar. Radar hears it because he says, "What's your name, sir?" And then there's like a sound effect of like a jet going overhead. Mm-hmm. And we see Radar like, "What?" And he leans in, and he says it again, and we don't hear it. And Radar has that shocked look on his face. So you're immediately there. You're like, "All right, what's that about?" If you don't if you don't know where this episode's going, you're like, that's going to be a thing.
And they even have him in shadows. I mean, you can't even see him. That adds to it also.
Yeah, it's great. It's a really, really great opening. So then we go to the pre-op. And there's a bunch of really interesting things in this little pre-op scene. First of all, we have presumably a nurse, male nurse, which we don't ever see on MASH, helping Burns on with his smock. And Burns is kind of like acting like a child, like he doesn't want to put his clothes on. And he yells at the guy, and the guy says, "Sorry, sir." That actor is unfortunately uncredited in this episode, so I couldn't figure out who that was. But that stuck out at me because it's like, we never see that. We never see I think in the Love and Marriage episode where it's McShane, that's sort of the central to the plot. But we very rarely see any men as anything other than orderlies, or I guess he's an orderly. Like on a Klinger level kind of thing. But I just thought it was interesting that they gave him a line, but he unfortunately does not get credited. And then the other nice detail was when Radar comes in with the clipboard, that's where we're supposed to follow the action, because that's obviously, we know something's up there. But I love that there's the row of X-rays that are hanging, and we see Frank grab one of them. And BJ has this great comment where he says, "Picking an easy one, Frank."
That's right.
There's a bunch of things to that. First of all, I love that BJ is paying attention to that, because that's totally a thing Frank would do. But I never got the sense that the surgeons could do that. I always thought that the surgeons were sort of assigned tables, and it was kind of like, they got put on the tables according to how badly they were wounded, but you couldn't pick an easy one. But I love that, A, again, that's something Frank would do, and that B, that BJ notices it, which is great.
Yeah, and that's – I may be wrong, but I don't think – other than this episode, I don't ever remember them having the X-rays hanging up like that. So I think that's something in this. And there's just something about, I know you've said it before, and I think you said it in your blog before you had the podcast. There's just something about this season, the look of the season, the way, it's just everything about this season just is perfect. And the episode, just the look of this episode, the way everything looks, the way everything is set up, the way everything plays out is just, it's like, this to me is MASH. And although, like you just said, with the orderly, if you wouldn't have said sir, I would have thought maybe it was George, the unseen doctor that we always
possibly. Yeah. So then we go to the OR, and the Hawkeye has a nice sort of monologue where he talks about, the lack of spontaneity in this war is driving me crazy. And he says, you know, get up, brush your teeth, and then operate on the Lord. And Frank's like, that's downright blasphemous. And of course, BJ, I keep saying BJ, Hawkeye has this whole rant. And then he has this bit where he says, Frank accuses him of being sicko mental. And he goes on this whole rant about what he's saying, just because I send people out, I fix people up to go out to get wounded again. You say, bug house out, and he has all these terms for being nuts. And then he has this joke where he says to the nurse, would you like to go into the oxygen tent for a few minutes of heavy breathing? And Margaret, of course, is disgusted. And Frank says, are you going to knock it off? Hawkeye says, that's what I'm trying to find out, Frank, which leads Margaret to say, you're disgusting. And for many years, I didn't know what they were referring to. I didn't know what that phrase was. And I had to look it up in Urban Dictionary because I'm a square. It's knock it off is not a term for sex. Knock it out is a term for sex. So they got it wrong a little bit, but for the longest time, I had no idea what that meant. I knew that Hawkeye was obviously talking about sex, but I didn't know what the specific phrase was that set Margaret off like that.
That's funny. I didn't even know it was a specific phrase. I thought he was just saying, I thought he was just being funny and just saying, that's what I'm trying to find out. And you just take it as he means he's, it's a sexual kind of thing. But, yeah, I didn't know that it was actually like a saying that they were, they kind of messed up. And I like how he, I think after that, does he say, oh, Lord, and then he winks and he says, no, not you. Sorry.
Sorry, not you. Yeah. So
at the patient.
Yeah. So then we go to the post op and they're talking to Klinger. Klinger's actually in his fatigues, except he's got a nurse's hat on. And we see that he's doing bedpan duty. Hawkeye and BJ talk to Captain Chandler, and they're trying to very gently, sort of suggest they're trying to not. What am I trying to say? They're not trying to let him know that they think he's pulling a fast one, but they're also, it's hard to say exactly where they are in him. And I love the way Captain Chandler looks at them. He has this wonderful assurance and he just says, my name is Jesus Christ. And he just says it. And Hawkeye and BJ are both like, is this guy kidding? Is he not kidding? And very quickly they realize that, that Captain Chandler is not kidding around.
Well, I like that he actually offers to spell it for them. So that was kind of
J-E-S.
Which I don't know if they were trying to show a little bit of humor. I don't think so. I think they were just trying to show that he was straightforward, just saying, like, this is my name and you should understand this. But I always thought that was funny that he says he'll that he will spell for them. I think that they're, Hawkeye and Trapper before him and BJ, they've been shown that they'll help out somebody who they think can't make it in the war, or not somebody like Klinger who obviously wants to go home, but they know he's not crazy. I think they know that something is going on with this guy, but they don't know to the extent. I think that they think he's trying to get out of the army by doing this. And they're kind of saying we understand this is what you want to do, but this probably isn't going to work. So you either want to try something different or just stop right now and just, go on with what you need to do. But, I don't think they know to the extent yet what is going on inside of his head.
Yeah. Hawkeye even has that line about, if you're trying to bug out of the army, you need a fresher approach. Mm-hmm. And then Chandler is just, not giving them any room to doubt him at all. Then Father Mulcahy comes in, which enables Hawkeye to utter the immortal line, Father Mulcahy, Jesus Christ, which is, I feel like the whole episode was sort of hinging on that line or something. And then following that, there is a scene in Potter's office, which was always cut in syndication. I never saw this scene until the DVDs. I guess you went through the same thing?
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Because you and I were watching MASH at the same channel, channel 29. So we were seeing the same edits. It's a wonderful scene of Frank and Margaret. And, you know, Margaret is espousing her religious bona fides, something you really didn't get too much. We never saw her at the services that much. So that's kind of interesting that she seems so strident here.
Yeah, that was a very early season Margaret also. And because Frank was kind of like that, especially in the first two seasons. Isn't even the first scene with them too? Aren't they reading the Bible? That was something from a little bit from the movie also. And for all the, season 4 and 5 is when her character starts to change from Hot Lips to Margaret. But with this episode, she's still very firmly in the Hot Lips camp. Any glimmer of change in her character is kind of stashed away for this episode.
Yeah, she's
they're both in full hypocrite mode in this one.
Completely. Potter and Harry Morgan is absolutely marvelous in this scene. I love the whole bit about, you know, why would you want to, if a man thinks he's Christ, he might just become a better Christian. And then, of course, Potter then uses a metaphor that as a horseman would understand. He says, if I had a horse who thought he was man of war, I don't know that I'd want to set him straight, if you get my drift, which is a marvelous Colonel Potterism. It's just fantastic. And this is, this is interesting, this scene, in that it is expressly political. MASH is a political show. For those of you surprised at that, I hate to break it to you.
But don't bring that up. You're going to get 1-star reviews.
MASH is a political show. But this scene is expressly political because we've got Margaret and Frank calling BJ and Hawkeye bleeding heart liberals. And they don't want them to infect Captain Chandler with their bleeding heart liberal ideas, which is, again, it's one of the most directly political comments in the entire series. And then I love they talk about that we want to make sure we defend the underdog. And Potter says, you really regard Jesus Christ as the underdog?
With something like that, and again, that just shows how timely MASH is, where even back then if they were complaining about bleeding heart liberals, you would have to assume, and again, I hate to get political, you would assume that they're more conservative. So you see that conservative victimhood of of them believing that Jesus Christ is an underdog, to which you just said Potter is kind of like, you see Jesus Christ as an underdog? That doesn't match up, but okay.
they're so afraid of Hawkeye and BJ's bad ideas that they can't even be espoused, because otherwise people will pick up them. Well, what does that say? But okay. So now things, of course, we've ratcheted things up a bit in the next scene, where Colonel Flagg is in Margaret's tent, and we see that he's been waiting at the edges of the camp and waiting for the cover of darkness. And Frank, ooh, just like the shadow.
I kind of felt bad for Frank in this scene, because I feel like if Frank wasn't there, Margaret looks like she is ready to pounce.
Oh, absolutely. Loretta Swit plays it like Margaret typically does. We already know that Margaret has a big thing for Colonel Flagg. And then this episode, even the way it's shot, is they're kind of sitting on on Margaret's bed, I believe, and the camera is pointing down at them like they're children. Mm-hmm. And its flag is standing up, and he's running this conversation a little bit. And of course, to even push it further for Margaret, he unbuttons his shirt a little bit, because that's where he's got a secret file like tucked inside of his pants. But I mean, like, he couldn't just do that anyway. Like, he couldn't have gotten it out before that. No, he has to kind of get a little bare chest. And we see Margaret watching him. And when he starts unbuttoning his shirt, we see her kind of like straighten up a little. She kind of gets like, whoa, this is getting serious. Again, I love Loretta Swit throwing that stuff in, that Margaret is clearly very warm for Colonel Flagg's form.
Yes, I think when she talks about the bigger shovel at the end, she might – inferring something else, but I mean,
I don't know what you're talking about, Mike. So, I don't know a lot of sexual innuendo. So anyway, that's the end of the
upbringing.
Yeah. that's the end of the act break. And, so then we come back to act two, Radar is, of course, sort of very reverent around Captain Chandler. And it's sort of an interesting idea because, I mean, Radar, we don't – I mean, we kind of know that Radar doesn't really believe this, but we don't know that he totally doesn't believe it. He certainly treats Chandler – he doesn't treat Chandler like it's a man who has been wounded. He treats Chandler like Chandler is Jesus Christ. We see him that he brings – Chandler, I think, a glass of orange juice, and he even says, I brought you an extra glass, which is wonderful. I love that. And again, it's Radar. We never got the sense that Radar was necessarily a man of faith, but he does come from farm country and in like the 1930s. So it would make total sense that he would be. But yeah. Again, it's just a nice little detail that he's so sort of reverent around Chandler.
Yeah. And I mean, this is also around the time Radar had been changing from the first couple of seasons, and he's not I feel like in this season he's right between that Radar of the early seasons and then the even more kind of like childlike Radar of the later seasons before he left. But I mean, I think out of all the characters he would act this way. I like that he brings the two juices to him.
Yeah.
But I think out of all of them he would be the one who would really think to himself like, you know, maybe this is him, and you know, and that is the way he would act around him. And I just think it's also the his Midwestern values. I think he just has to respect for somebody who he believes could be Jesus Christ. So that's how he's going to act around him.
Yeah, completely. So then we the following scene is in Potter's office where Flag is showing up, and there's Hawkeye and BJ. Hawkeye has a crack about Flag is making everything over here safe from democracy. And I love that Potter occasionally has to sort of step on Hawkeye a little bit and exert his authority and even says, can it, Pierce? Which I like. I mean, Potter's sort of like, look, I'm taking this somewhat seriously here. I mean, Colonel Flag is a colonel. He is of equal rank to Colonel Potter, even though, of course, this is Colonel Potter's camp. But he's taking this seriously. He's not letting Hawkeye just get away with everything. Again, which is as much as I don't want to see Hawkeye get stepped on, I also appreciate that Colonel Potter is more comfortable exercising his command and his authority than, of course, Henry ever would have been. And that's again that adds to the extra tension or in these episodes in these Colonel Potter years that I really like, because Colonel Potter is very different. He's very much in command of the situation.
We'll see in a couple of minutes, because again, I'm sure you enjoy it because you like me, like when they bring up earlier characters where
yes.
It directly compares him to Henry, and Colonel Potter will have none of it. And yes. I think especially when Colonel Potter first came on the show, he's been in the army for a long time. He has seen probably everything or almost everything. So he knows how to handle these situations. And like you said, he's kind of letting it go a little bit, but he also needs to deal with somebody who is on his level, which Flag might be nuts, but he's also a colonel. So he knows how to balance trying to help Hawkeye and BJ, but also let Flag do what he has to do and hopefully get it taken care of without too much trouble. I think that's one of his talents. And that's why, unlike Henry, who was basically just like Hawkeye and Trapper, but he was there and just in a position of power and just wanted to get done and get out of there as fast as possible. Potter is a lifer, so he kind of knows how to handle these situations.
Yeah. I like that he sort of lets Flag almost exhaust himself a little, where he's again, another brilliant comic turn by Edward Winter as Colonel Flag. I mean, just one of the great anti-comic performances of all time. Just that marvelous squint. Of course, he can never sit down. He's always standing up. He's always got to feel like he's dominating the procedure. I know someone like that who always has to be standing up when they're talking, because I think there's a sort of like, you know, none too subtle domination sort of feeling of that. So he's always doing that. It's great. He spars with Hawkeye and BJ a little. They talk about the, you know, even Colonel Potter says it sounds like fatigue. You know, he ran 57 bombing missions, and maybe that's what it is. And then it leads to, and you already mentioned it, but this is one of my absolute favorite exchanges in any episode of MASH ever. And it just makes it so much better that it's in this episode where he leans into Potter and he says, give me a medical decision now. And then he waits and he says, the last CO they had here couldn't make a decision without a month's warning. And that is the that is what pisses Potter off. There's this great shot of just Harry Morgan, and he looks disgusted. And he says, "I'm not fond of personal abuse, Colonel. I was in this man's arm, and the only thumb you cared about was the one you had in your mouth." And he barks at it. And that even sets Flag back a step. They cut back to Flag, and we see Flag straightens up a little. And, you know, look, I've already acknowledged, I mean, I do a podcast about MASH. Of course, I overanalyze MASH. That's what the show is. It's what part of the reason I do this is because my brain naturally goes to places. But part of the thing I love about that line is I feel like Potter is insulted on Henry's behalf. Is that Potter is it? Potter inherited the 477th, and it was obviously a crack unit. And he has heard, again, I'm piecing this all, I'm doing all this backstory, I'm no-prizing this in my head. But it's like when Potter arrived at the 477th, he knew that whoever this Henry Blake guy was, who died in, you know, died, by the way, you had to have heard that, built this great unit. He was obviously a very good commander. And to have this sort of punk come in and insult Henry to his face, it feels like Potter is sort of defending Henry Blake, a man he's never met. And I love it so much.
You do not have to explain that to me. I love MASH is not known for its continuity, but especially in this season, because they brought in Potter and BJ, there is a lot of continuity in this season just because, you know, they had to explain why there were new people. And I'm the same way. And I feel the same way too. You know that Potter has sat in the swamp and talked to Hawkeye, and Hawkeye told him, and I'm sure that Radar told him about Henry also. And again, Potter is a guy who's been in the military, and he came to the unit and knows that this is a good unit, and he is basically, you know, standing up for Henry because Henry can't stand up for himself. And you love it because it's like, even you know that Potter is the person who took over for Henry, but he still realizes that Henry was a good man and probably has talked to Hawkeye and heard about him. So yeah, it's just amazing. I love that line. I love the whole scene. And I like the look that Hawkeye gives to BJ after Potter does it. That
yes.
Look is kind of, it's a look that probably Hawkeye in his head is probably saying, yeah, I know Henry wouldn't have reacted this way, but it's nice to know that the person who is taking over for him is standing up for him. And it's a look also that I think Hawkeye is, in his head, gaining more admiration for Potter as this season goes on. I mean, as from the, you know, second episode where he's worried about him being a regular army guy to each episode after that, probably gaining more and more respect for him, even though he's not the same exact kind of commander that Henry was. But yeah, it's just amazing. I love that line. I love that scene. It's just, it's amazing.
I can't tell you how validated I feel hearing someone not say that that's a crazy theory, because that's been rattling around in my head for 20 years, and it just felt silly to ever. I'm this much thought behind it, but it's so nice to hear someone not laugh at that crazy theory.
Oh, Rob, I'm headcanoning right now about and Hawkeye having conversations in the swamp. You don't have to.
All the episodes of MASH we never got to see.
Oh yeah, I've thought the same things.
that's marvelous. So then they decide, well, okay, we have to get a psychological examination. That's where Hawkeye, of course, decides to bring in his own forces, which in this case is Sidney Friedman. Potter's not familiar with Sidney Friedman. He says, "Good man," and he says, Hawkeye says, "Sidney could have talked Oedipus into leaving home." So they put in a call, and then of course we cut flash forward. We see Sidney arriving. There is a reference to the fact that Sidney Friedman and Colonel Flagg played poker together once.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is referring to the Deal Me Out episode. Now, back in that episode, Colonel Flagg was not Colonel Flagg. But, of course, we can always retcon that was simply one of his aliases.
It was definitely – he was undercover. That
he was undercover. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh,
so, yeah. And then Flagg tries to put these sort of emotional thumbscrews to Friedman, saying, you know, you're going to back me on this. And then he sort of threatens Friedman. And then I love Sidney says, look, you know, between you and me and whatever Mike I might be talking into, which is, do you really believe if I were a communist, I'd hesitate for a second to sign a loyalty oath? And I'd like to go on talking to you, Flag, but with your schizophrenia, I have to charge you double time. And it's like, that is what you want someone to just tell Flag to shut the F up and do it in such a witty, unbowed way. And it's just like, when I was a kid, it's like, just I want to hang out with Sydney so bad.
You're saying, that's what I was going to say. I mean, watching that, and like, you know, I was a quiet, and you've said it before, too. I was a quiet kid. I've read comic books. I watched MASH all the time. But, you know, somebody like Sidney Friedman, somebody like Hawkeye, Bill Murray, that's who you wanted to be. You wanted to be able to tell off the bullies and do it in a funny way where they didn't even understand what you were talking about and then be able to walk out with a smile and they're just like, I don't understand what they just said. And, you know, this episode, just another great scene. I would love to hang out with Sidney Friedman. We should have got a Sidney Friedman hour-long drama after.
Yes. Oh, my God. Sidney.
Right after Lou Grant. Come on.
Right, exactly. Mondays at 10 on CBS. Sidney.
One question I do have is, and it's the scene coming up next. Now, is this – we know it's the first time that Potter meets Friedman, but is it the first time that BJ meets him? Because you can't really tell. I mean, you could – I know you're going to talk about – which I think that scene was cut out in syndication also because I feel like I only saw that when I got the DVDs.
But yeah, where they exchanged pictures. Yeah.
Yeah. And the way Hawkeye says, you know, another proud father. But, you know, in episodes this season, he'll introduce BJ to characters who knew Trapper. And, you know, this is the first time BJ's meeting them. So he doesn't introduce BJ to him. I mean, I'm sure Sidney could have maybe come for a poker game, but then why wouldn't have Potter met him? Again, this is the kind of stuff I would wonder about. So I always just wondered if it was the first time that he met BJ or I don't know.
I always took it that that basically is the first time that they're familiar with each other. Hawkeye's mentioned him,
yeah,
and Hawkeye's told Sidney at some point Trapper's gone home and there's a new guy in here. But I'm taking this is the first time that they're meeting.
Okay,
in any way. But one of the things I wanted to mention just before that, though, right after Sidney leaves the Radar's office, we get a scene with Klinger where Klinger comes in. In one of his outfits, and he's got a flowery hat, and he's delivering mail, and he's singing a song, Flag tries to, basically bully Klinger around, where he says, "The next time I see you, you better be dressed like G.I. Joe. You hear me?" And Klinger just says, "What does he say?" So he's like, he says, "Next time I see you, Tinkerbell, you better be as G.I. as General MacArthur. You hear me?" And Klinger says, "Loud and clear, Mary." And then just picks right up with the song and walks out, completely ignoring Flag. And for the longest time, I always thought that scene didn't really belong in the episode. It just seemed kind of silly in the middle of this sort of kind of heavy thing. And I thought, well, they're just giving Klinger something to do. But now I watch it and I realize, no, I mean, yeah, I'm sure part of it was written to give Jamie Farr something to do. But also, it's, as we know about Flag, he has a need to dominate. And he has just tried to dominate Sidney Friedman. And Sidney Friedman's not having it. Sidney Friedman's just not going to be dominated. So, of course, Flag is like, well, I got to dominate somebody because that's who I am. And so
he even tried to dominate Radar in that scene also. I think Radar kind of blew him off. And Radar's afraid of him. But, I mean, even in that scene with Sidney, he kind of says something to Radar. And Radar isn't – in future episodes, Radar is a lot more afraid of him. I think Radar just kind of – blows him off. So yeah, I think it's like he couldn't bully Friedman, he couldn't bully Radar, so now he feels like he needs to bully the next person who is in the room with him. And I feel like even Klinger doesn't really even give him the time of day.
No.
Yeah,
that's what I love about that is that Flag's having a bad day. Nobody's respecting his authority. Klinger just basically laughs him off and just walks out, which is great. I love that. It's
calls him.
Yeah, Flag is not given any victories today at all, which is fantastic. So then we have the scene where they're talking in post-op and Sidney shows a picture of his kid and Hawkeye shows it to BJ and BJ then exchanges kid pictures. And we find out this is the only of two episodes, I think, where we ever hear that Sidney has kids. Mention it. There's another one where he talks about performing he removed a boil on one of his kids' tuchuses, I believe in the OR episode, but we generally don't hear much about Sidney's personal life. You don't even hear about that.
Again, that would have been in the spinoff. You would have seen his wife and his kid. Would have been amazing.
All that stuff. Yep. Seen all that. 9 seasons we could have gotten out of that, I'm sure. So, anyway, we have Hawkeye and BJ and Sidney interrupting a interesting discussion of theology between Father Mulcahy and
I love that conversation. Yeah. Because again, I would love that if that was, if you could talk to Jesus and instead of saying like, yes, you know, Judas shouldn't have done it, he actually says to him that being Judas, I mean, it's again, for a half hour sitcom, it's very philosophical that you're watching.
It sure is.
Somebody who says he's Jesus and he says to him, well, you know, that's being Judas, that's all he could have done. And then I would have loved to have heard what Father McKee's argument back to him was, but they were interrupted. So
yeah, we don't get to hear the end of that. Yeah.
Nope.
So the scene between Sidney and Captain Chandler is a masterpiece of understatement in that there's a lot that's got to be conveyed here in a very short scene. Mm-hmm. But they managed to pull it off where Sidney rattles off the list of the medals that he's gotten and how many missions he's run. And Chandler, or in this case, Jesus Christ, says, you know, you're not in the army. You're not from Idaho. No, you're not in the army. And I love when he says, of course not, which mm-hmm. is great. Like, not just no, of course not. Like, why would I be in an army? That's just ridiculous. And then Sidney says, but you died. I arose. And then Sidney seems to kind of jump a little bit. It's an interesting, again, it's probably because we've only got probably a minute or two to get to this conversation. We don't have a whole episode of it. Again, this would have been great in the Sidney spinoff. But he says, you know, you're in an army hospital. Why are you here? Shouldn't you be in the nose of a B-29? And that's where he's been for the past 2 years. And we see that there's this moment that crosses over Chandler's face and Alan Fudge's face, a look of slight confusion. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's the moment where Sidney is maybe getting inside. He's getting to Chandler a little bit because Jesus, I'm putting that in quotes here, obviously, is confronted with the fact that he's been in the nose of a B-29 dropping bombs. And to Jesus Christ, that is just beyond offensive. It's just horrifying. And I love just that there's just this slight look that Alan Fudge has in his eyes of, wait, what? Like, that doesn't match what is going on in my head. It's a very subtle moment, but it's fantastic.
It's the writing, and I believe, again, I think this was Burt Prutlewski's first MASH script.
Yes, it was. We will talk about Mr. Prutlewski in a moment, but yeah.
But I mean, just the melding of script and performance with Alan Fudge and Alan Arbus. I mean, it's so understated, but there's, like you said, I mean, then it's got to be done in such a short amount of time. But I mean, there's so many lines and just the way he underplays everything, but you get across just from his facial reactions, like you said. I mean, and at the end of their conversation, that just one tear that comes falling down.
Yeah.
How actors do it, but it's just amazing. But I mean, just the lines where he says, you know, I'm Christ, what are you doing in an army hospital? And he says, I'm Christ, where should I be? And to be able to write this episode into your first episode of MASH is amazing.
Yeah, talk about it's like, you know, hitting a home run on your first at bat in a professional baseball game. I mean, it's hitting a grand slam, basically, is what you're talking about. And the line that he has about, I'm sorry, and I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but in that scene, I feel like there's a moment where Sidney could have gotten to Chandler. Mm-hmm. Like there was like a crack of light in the door, and then it shuts down. Because then Chandler has the line where he says, I'm sorry, I'm not this Captain Chandler you're looking for, but I hope you can find him. And to me, that is whatever mental break has occurred in Chandler's mind. He's now permanently Jesus Christ. It's over. It's over. Chandler is gone. And then that leads to just an absolutely stunning exchange where, and I almost feel like, Sidney senses that too, because he stops probing. He stops asking Chandler about being Chandler, and he moves on to, is it true that God answers all prayers? And then you have that single tear, and you have Chandler say, yes, sometimes the answer is no. And they just let that moment sit. And I mean, again, what tackling that on a sitcom – mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's unreal. It's unreal to wade into this kind of material and then to do it so well is just it's just amazing. And it's I don't want to say it's Sydney's finest moment because he has mostly great moments on the show, mm-hmm. but it's one of Sydney's best moments.
It is, and it's funny. I tell people the story when I tell people I like MASH. I had a cousin who once said to me, like, I don't like MASH. It's like, it's supposed to be funny, but it's like all this serious stuff. And I'm like, but when it's done well, like this, that's why it's so good. Which is funny because later in life he liked Scrubs, which is a very good show. It's not as good as MASH, but it's really good. But I mean, when you can do it and meld it like this episode, it's just perfection. And it's like you said, I mean, that last exchange between both of them, I mean, if you're just tuning in, I don't think what was it? MASH was probably on Saturday nights at this point.
I think it was on Friday nights for the first half of this season. Yeah.
To just watch a sitcom and you're getting a conversation like this. How can you not be blown away with that line where he says, you know, isn't it true that God answers all prayers? And that one tear comes down and he says, yeah, sometimes the answer is no. I mean, and you know that he's, like you said, I mean, I think that when you saw that crack in the facade, he almost got through, and I think he goes back. But you know that he's referencing himself also. That,
yep.
You know.
Yeah. It's just unreal. It's mm-hmm. just unreal. That follows up. There's a kind of fairly silly scene in the swamp where they argue about whether this guy is really Christ or not. And Frank, of course, says he's not Christ because I had a little prayer, a little one, and my prayer wasn't answered. So that's clearly not right. And Hawkeye immediately guesses that he's like, just because you didn't get any chocolate pudding doesn't mean that he's not Christ. And he's like, what do you mean? How did you know? He says, you always pray for chocolate pudding. And there's a little bit about, if you're not careful, you know, your Frank is going to become a bad name in history. And he's again, BJ says, right. How many 2-year-old Pontius Pilots do you mean? It's a very silly scene, but it's just a reminder that Burns's religiosity is almost entirely transactional.
It is, but I got to give it to Frank that his I wash my hands of the two of you. Not a bad joke for Frank. Now the laugh after, a little spooky, little
He laughs like a horse.
Oof. Yeah. Yeah. But you know what? The joke, not that bad for Frank.
For Frank. It's a low bar. So then we're back in Potter's office, and we cut right to Sidney Friedman saying he's Christ, which leads to Potter just – if you look closely, you could see that I'm not laughing. And you know, Sydney, of course, is meeting Potter for the first time. So yes. He's kind of sizing this guy up like, okay, can I kid around? Can mm-hmm. I, you know, okay, all right. And he says, no, the man's a victim. He's had a psychological break. And then Flag is sitting there and absolutely says, oh, we got to stuff the guts back in him. And then it leads to, I mean, man, there's so many great lines in this episode. Mm-hmm. I have so many to pick from. But there's just a marvelous line here where Flag is going on and on about we got to stuff the guts back in him, like I just said. And Sydney says, you're a victim of this war too, Flag, but you're such an unbelievable example of walking fertilizer. It's hard for me to care. I mean, I talk about a line you can apply to right now.
Exactly.
There are a lot of people out there who I find to be pretty horrid people. And on some level, I feel some sympathy for them because mm-hmm. I feel like they're maybe not bright or they've been lied to or they've mm-hmm. been screwed around for so long that they're sort of pathetic and they have to reach for every strand of dignity they think they can find. At the same time, some of these people are such performative assholes mm-hmm. that I don't care anymore.
Yep.
I'm like, I don't care that you're a victim. You're awful. You're mm-hmm. just awful. And there are people who are victims who are not awful. And so those are the ones I can care about. So to me, once again, Sidney Friedman dropping the knowledge.
Watching this again and with everything, and this is probably the 100th time I've watched this episode, but with everything that's gone on the past couple of years and everything that's still going on now, I mean, it is. It's I'm not just saying it to be the bleeding heart liberal that I am, but I wouldn't mind if Frank and Margaret called me that. But it's, MASH, you can watch it now and 40 years later, it's unfortunate. It's actually unfortunate because, and it's set in the 50s, but it's still the same type of people walking around today. So,
yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, we all know where Colonel Flagg would be if he was a real person. Mm-hmm. Again, there's a great line read by Alan Arbus, by the way, Allens, lots of good Allens on Mac. Arbus, Fudge, Alda. It's a good
maybe
name.
Maybe that's why they didn't hire Alan Fudge as BJ, because they just figured there was already Alan Alda.
How much would that suck to lose that job? Like, he probably would be like, I'll change my name. Whatever you call me. Call me Tim Fudge. I don't care. Just give me the guy. Give me the job. But so when he's relating this idea that this kid from Idaho dropping bombs on people that had never met him, and he finally says, enough. He goes, you're Christ. And the way that Arbus puts in that pause where he says, enough, your pause, Christ. And he's sort of being Chandler in that moment where this guy's experiencing this psychological break. And in that moment, Chandler is reaching around in his brain for an alternate identity that he can become. And it's just that little pause where you're like, well, yeah, that's what your brain would probably do. You would rifle through every person you could think of in your mind, and who would represent the most peaceful person you could think of. And again, just the way that Arbus puts in that pause and gives it that sense of verisimilitude that, yeah, that's probably what it would do. You would just have that moment of like, who am I thinking of? Christ. You would just go from there. It wouldn't just be smooth like that. It's just, again, just marvelous performance by Alan Arbus. And so then, Potter says, well, what do you suggest? And Potter says, after a lot of help, we may be able to turn him back into Arnold Chandler, but we'll never be able to turn him into a fighting tool. And it's my professional opinion that we don't try. And then, of course, that leads Flagg to say, I'm going to blow the whistle on you. Once again, Sidney is unmoved. Blow away.
Hey.
And then they go into this absolutely fantastic thing about you didn't sign your loyalty oath, featuring one of the great jokes of all time, which is, perfect. He's very smart, Sidney. Terrific. I wish I'd thought of that. And then BJ says, where do we go to not sign? Oh, manna from heaven, that joke. It's just...
and it is. It's a great joke. But you also think about it. Like, he says he's going to blow the whistle. Wouldn't it be bad if he went back into civilian practice and they said you didn't sign your loyalty oath? So Flagg really isn't thinking this through when he says, no, I'll just leave you here. But yeah, it is an awesome, awesome line. That and the, we'll put his thumb up there and he says, Whistler's bombardier.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean, being able to balance out that you just talked about, that Alan Arbus performance of a minute ago where, you know, he's talking about how this person cracked under the strain of bombing people. And to go from that to a minute later of just having, you know, a hilarious conversation, just showing how much of an idiot Flagg is, that it's to be able to balance all that. And that's only in a couple of minutes, but you're able to do this in a whole episode. It's just, I keep saying it, but it's amazing. I never fail to find this episode just amazing.
Yeah, this exchange between Flagg and Sidney is like matter and antimatter. I mean, they're just bouncing because Edward Winter as Flagg is all full of bravado and energy and stalking and kind of trying to fill the space and be big. And Alan Arbus is quiet. He's a lot smaller. He's obviously a very small, thin man. And he's very still. He's got his arms folded with the clipboard. So he doesn't have that need to be like the cock of the walk. And again, it really is just two incompatible comedic styles, and yet they blend together perfectly. And then, of course, you've got Flagg saying, you're not smart, Friedman. You're dumb, very dumb, but you met your match in me, which Mike Farrell / BJ laughs, and he laughs in a way that seems genuine. It seems like he didn't know the line was coming. Now, I mean, he had to have, I'm sure it was in the script, but it's a genuine laugh, which is fantastic. And then, of course, the kicker is, you're going to stay right here, shrink, and where you're going to remain loyal to the country that's going to hound your every step. And, of course, Potter's great summation is a little loco weed must have gotten mixed in with his feed. Another great horse metaphor. Thank you, Colonel Potter.
And what does Sidney say? He's what Freud called spooky.
Oh, man, it's just every bit here is just marvelous. And then you get Hawkeye as the button on it, and he says, on the other hand, if Flagg wasn't mean, rotten, or crazy, he wouldn't have any personality at all, which causes Sidney to laugh. Again, another seemingly genuine laugh.
Yeah.
Again, it had to have been in the script, but it's the way the reaction seems very genuine. So then we have one final scene. Not the final scene, but a big scene where Radar, who has not been in this episode terribly much to this point, talks to Chandler before he's loaded on the bus. And he says, sir, are you really who you say you are? Are you really him? And again, Chandler just says, yes. And then Radar, almost in tears, really gorgeous, says, I wonder if you would bless this for me. And of course, he pulls out the teddy bear and he says, I know we're not real. I know he's not real, but we're very close. He blesses him. And then he blesses Radar. Yeah. And you could see that this has great emotional effect.
The line reading when he tells him, and again, it's the first time we find out that his first name is Walter.
Yep.
But the line reading that Gary Berghoff does when he said, I'm not going to try to do it, but when he says, you know, I'm Walter, it's just the look on his face and the way his voice drops. And, it's again, in an episode full of understated performances, it's another great understated performance right there when he does it like that.
Yeah, it's perfect. They had not ever come up with a name for Radar before this, and it was Gary Berghoff that asked the writers to finally give him a name, and that's what they came up with Walter. But just the way that he takes it so seriously, it's just beautiful. Radar's faith is obviously, again, even though what we just talked about earlier, that to this point they hadn't really explored that too much. Mm-hmm. It's obviously very important to Radar. Maybe not the religious sort of dogma of it, the going to church kind of thing, going to the services. But nevertheless, the faith part of it is obviously supremely important to Radar. And I didn't notice this until I've watched this episode 50 times, that in the scene where Chandler says, bless all of you, to Hawkeye and Father McKay and BJ when they load him on the bus, Radar's in the background. He's in the far back. He comes out from behind the tent and is watching all this. And there's this great shot of Alan Alda's face as they load him onto the truck and they push up like the ladder and he looks worried. He looks genuinely worried for this guy because they know that he's ill and they're just worried about what's going to happen to him. Again, it's just an absolutely perfect way to end the main thrust of the episode.
Yeah. And then ends with the spooky 70s sitcom music.
That spooky MASH music they like to use sometime.
That and the Rankin Bass, button music at the end of Rankin Bass Christmas specials. That and the MASH music. Always, I was glad when they stopped using the MASH music around like season 7 or 8. It spooked me out when I was a kid. Man, that was weird.
Yeah. And then we have the button scene, which is a very silly scene. Hawkeye and BJ playing the state capitals game where they're doing, you have to name a capital that ends, that starts with the end letter of the previous one. And BJ names a cotton cattle, which is fantastic. There's no such place. And then Los Angeles, there's no such place. What are you talking about? I've been to Los Angeles. There's no such place. And then we get Klinger coming in dressed as Moses. And it's silly and it's funny and it's a nice contrast to the heaviness of the episode. But where the hell did he get all that stuff? I mean, I guess the beard or cotton balls? Is that the idea there?
I assume so. Where did he get? I don't know. Maybe he got somebody's robe that was brown. But I mean, oof.
He's got a wig and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Who knew there was like, what was the old, where's Chris Franklin when you need him? What were the old Halloween costumes that they used to make? I can't remember the name of it.
Oh, the Ben Cooper. Yeah. The Cooper Halloween costume. Yeah.
There was like a Korean Ben Cooper next to Rosie's bar that he was able to go buy it in or something like that.
It's a weird scene again, because we've seen in previous episodes that Klinger was actually fairly religious. He did go to the services and he talks about, Matthew, John, Joseph, and then he goes grumpy, dopey, and he just sort of mixes them all together and storms off, leading Hawkeye and BJ to laugh. And
obviously not a good speller, though, because if you look at the Ten Commandments that he has on there, he spells Val T-H-O-W. So,
oh, I didn't even notice that. Oh, that's great.
Public school system not doing its job there. For
maybe not. Well, he probably quit school before it was a little too late. So that is the episode. There's a couple other things I want to mention as we're wrapping up here. First of all, of course, Quo Vadis is Latin for where are you going? So the episode is technically called Where Are You Going, Captain Chandler, which of course has multiple meanings here. This episode has no laugh track in any form, of course, because where are you going to put laugh tracks in an episode like this? this, for Pete's sakes. And we do want to mention Bert Prelutsky. This is his first of 8 MASHes. He would go on to write some of the best MASHes ever. He wrote later on this season, he would write the Novocaine Mutiny. Season 5, he wrote the General's Practitioner. Both very, very, actually superb episodes. He wrote an article where he talked about how this, getting this assignment, revived his career. He had done a lot of TV series like The Rockford Files, Dragnet, the one with the 60s one with Harry Morgan. Mm-hmm. And his career was kind of in a stall. And apparently he asked his agent one day, well, what shows do you want to work on? And he said, oh, well, Mary Tyler Moore or MASH. And his agent was like, well, geez, why don't you just ask for the moon? You know what I mean? You're asking to do the two most acclaimed shows. And he was like, well, you asked. And apparently Prelutsky gave some sort of interview where he said how much he enjoyed MASH, and Larry Gelbart saw it, and then they ran into each other at some function, and Gelbart says, I saw what you wrote, and, you know, we're always looking for story ideas, so if you have a story idea, pitch me one. And they pitched him this. And, I mean, wow. You know? And he said it really revived his career. Prelutsky would go on to work on Mary Tyler Moore. He ended up working on Diagnosis Murder. His career as a writer, TV writer, stops around the 90s. He is still around. He has gone on to become a relatively famous, for whatever lack of a better term, a very, very arch conservative. And he seems to kind of, I guess, regard, he seems, you know, which is interesting to me because this episode very clearly endorses Hawkeye DJ's point of view. This episode is clearly showing Frank and Margaret to be the dolts in this episode. And so it's interesting to me that Mr. Prelutsky, I guess, changes mind over time. Now, again, I haven't seen that he's written any television past the 90s. I did see on a website that was posted just a couple of days ago that he wrote a post for some website where he says that the election was fraudulent. So it's good to know that he's still writing fiction. That's great for him. I mean, for whatever you want to say about him now, he wrote some of the best MASHes ever, and you can't ever take that away from him because this straight-up masterpiece, this episode.
This is why you don't want to – it seems like there's a lot of older people in my life who I know were a lot more liberal back in the 70s who for some reason now are not. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on in his life, but they'll never be able to take away the enjoyment that I knew he had written other MASH episodes, but I didn't know that he had done Novocaine Mutiny and General's Practitioner, which are awesome as well.
Those are masterpiece episodes.
Yeah. Absolutely. And this one, I mean, whenever somebody says to me, you know, I want to watch MASH, I usually put, and this probably isn't the most representative of what MASH is, but I'm like, if you want to watch a good MASH episode, I'll watch this MASH episode with you. So
absolutely. So, okay. I mean, in an episode full of amazing lines, both funny and not funny, do you have a particular favorite line from this one, Mike?
The not funny, just the line when, you know, Sydney says to him, is it true that God answers all prayers, and stares ahead and just says, yes, sometimes the answer is no, is just an amazing line. As a funny line, there's actually one when Sydney walks in and is talking to BJ and Hawkeye and says, where's my patient? And Hawkeye says to him, he's right over there. Don't you recognize him from his picture? Which I hope. So
that's a good one. I haven't really ever thought about it, but that is a good line. My favorite is one you've already quoted, where he says after Flag storms off, and they're all sort of surmising what they just saw. And I love that Sidney Friedman says he's what Freud used to call spooky. I mean, first of all, I love the way that Friedman puts the spooky, like he just says it in his funny way. And then I like the idea that Flag is so demented that even the great Sigmund Freud is like, I don't know what this guy's problem is. You know, that's just, I love that Sidney Friedman is obviously a superb psychologist, psychiatrist, but he also can have fun with it sometimes. So that's, again, this episode is just full of great lines. I mean, I don't know to how much, I mean, obviously any script that was sent to a major television show like this gets rewritten, lines get added, lines get altered, and the people who wrote them on the staff don't necessarily get credit. So we don't know that every line of this episode, every scene was done by Bert Prelutsky, but he's the credited writer. So he gets credit for it. And I mean, this is just, it's just a flawless episode. And to me, it's even more impressive when you know what a tightrope they're walking, is that with so many other premises, this premise could have been ghastly. But the fact that they nail it so perfectly is is just a testament to this, why this show, why I love the show as much as I do, why 20, 30 years later after first seeing it, I'm still talking about it, why I'm doing a why I'm committing 11 years of my life to podcasting about it. I mean, it's stuff like this because the show is just that good.
And I think I'm probably repeating myself, and I love the later seasons of MASH. I do. But the reason why, especially this season in particular, and some of these earlier seasons, is they could do episodes like this and walk that tightrope, and it didn't hit you over the head with it. I love some of the later seasons, and they touched on things that were important and needed to be touched on. But there were times where it was so, it felt like it was, it wasn't so subtle. Whereas this, they just, as you said, and perfectly, I mean, you're walking a tightrope, and you can do that drama, and you can do the comedy, and it just, it all works, and it just works perfectly, and you're not being hit over the head with it. You know, you can watch it 4, 5, 20, 25 times and still find new things in it, and still find new things to marvel at in the writing and in the performances. And that's just a testament to the writers, the directors, the actors. It's you know, again, I keep saying it, just and it's an amazing episode.
It is. And think about, there are a bunch of classics left to go in this season. Oh, and it's like, and for a lot of other shows, if they did this once, they'd be like, mm-hmm. we're done. Yeah. We're good. And yet there's still many more great ones to come. It's unreal.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait. Can't wait for the next two seasons, especially because they're the two best. But this season, I can't wait.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Mike, thank you so much for coming back. You know, I always enjoy talking to you. I now feel like you're not allowed to do any other podcasts without me. This is it. We're done. You got to do MASHcast Pod Dylan, Treasury Cast maybe, or at a Film and Water. But that, come on, you're my guest now, Mike.
Nobody will let me on any other podcast. You were the only person who opens the door when I knock and acknowledges that I'm there. So every time you open the door, I will gladly come in and talk.
I am always happy to talk to you. And of course, anyone who listens to the show that doesn't listen to my other shows, I did an episode a couple of months ago with Mike and his son, Xander, his 9-year-old son, talking about Bob Dylan, which was a marvelous episode. So, there's a lot of podcasting talent in the Jameson family. I will say that.
I'm trying to get him on MASHcast, but as of yet, he has not become a MASH fan. I told him I was going on tonight, and he kind of just went, ugh.
Well, he's got some time. He's got some time.
I know.
I didn't like MASH when I was 9 either, I don't think. Oh, no, I did. I take that back. I did. But still. So anyway.
It was also 1983, so I mean, I wasn't playing on my iPad all the time either.
Exactly. There's so many less things that distract you back then. So, well, Mike, why don't you tell people where they can find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter, on Facebook. That's probably about it. I'm not on Instagram or anything like that. It's lucky that I'm on Twitter, for God's sakes.
What's your handle on Twitter so people can find you?
You love that handle much.
I do. I will ask you every time.
This lightsaber kills fascists.
Marvelous. Again, I know I'm tired of you saying that. So speaking of Twitter, you can find us over on Twitter at MASH477Cast. Of course, all the episodes are on our website, FineWaterPodcast.com. You can subscribe to MASHcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Amazon Music. And if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, go to Patreon.com/FW Podcast. And there you're going to unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So a big salute to Nicholas Prom, Russell Burbage, Stan Peel, Dolph DeVries, Britt Schramm, Mike Thomas, and Michael Porter for their support of MASHcast. I really appreciate it, guys. That's just wonderful. So thanks, everybody, for listening. We will see you next week. But until then, that is all.
I gave you a chance to play ball. Now I'm blowing the whistle on you, Friedman.
Blow away.
Colonel Potter, this man, this American, never signed his officer's loyalty oath, and I intend to see that he's thrown out of the service.
Very smart, Sidney.
Terrific.
I wish I thought of that.
Where do we go to not sign?